-3 is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it. Must be 21 or older.
-3 with Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to Draft Week. Welcome to some hot sports talk here on -3, presented as ever by our pals over at Omaha. Let's get to it. Eddie Spaghetti's behind the glass at home, Staten Island style. And there he is in his usual spot, seated high atop show business. It's Kevin Hench. Are you ready for the draft? Matt Ryan is officially retired. I thought that happened at least a year ago. Your basketball team is in the playoffs. Your hockey team's in the playoffs. All I got baseball is a 500 team. Baseball team.
My baseball team just swept somebody else's baseball team.
Yeah, well, that my team. That's what I was just saying. My team's 500 now after your rugged bunch just passed through the banks of the Three Rivers. How are you, Hench?
The Pirates just got swept by a team that has been starting a guy who has struck out 18 times and has one hit. Bobby Dalbec has started the season 1-for-38 or one, but he struck out 18 times and he has one hit. Now, for comparison, Sandy Koufax is often, invoked as the worst hitter in Major League history, which he's allowed to be because arguably the greatest pitcher in Major League history, terrible hitter. He struck out 5 times for every hit he got. So right now, Bobby Dalbec is running at 3.6 times worse than the worst hitter in Major League history swept the Buccos.
Can you read the room? Can you read the digital Zoom room?
Okay.
Hench? I'm not interested. I'm not interested in talking about sports. You want to talk about music? I thought we had a good conversation last week. The audience enjoyed it too. Thank you for all the notes to the Czech Republic and even to the henchmen out there who supported Hench and Spaghetti's weird. I mean, it's fine. Listen, I'm not getting in the Wayback Machine. We have to talk about draft and hopefully not Stanley Cup playoffs. I don't want to talk about basketball playoffs.
Hockey.
Can we talk about football? Because the draft is here, and that's exciting.
What's funny about football, and by the way, loyal listeners, check out this 50th anniversary of the 1974 Pittsburgh Steelers draft. You're going to enjoy it. You're going to learn a lot. You won't believe that the Steelers got 5
holes. Spoiler alert. They probably already are a little aware of what went on there. But I want to say, Hench, thank you for beating me to the punch on this one. Yes, we are doing 3 podcasts a week, as you may have noticed here on -3. And this week, our extra episode, as it were, is a deep dive, 50 years, the golden anniversary of the greatest draft, not just in the NFL, not just in football, but in the history of people. The worst draft in the history of people, probably Vietnam, like in the 70s, like when they're still getting people stateside.
I'd go Cole Strange, then Vietnam.
Cole Strange, Vietnam. Yeah. And then what the Jets do most years.
N'Keal Harry, Cole Strange, Vietnam.
Johnny Lamb Jones.
N'Keal Harry, Cole Strange, Dalton Keene, Devin Asiasi, Vietnam.
Packers in 93, second overall, Dion. Eggman's gone, but Dion, Derek Thomas, and Barry Sanders are all on the board. Let's take Tony Mandarich. Okay.
But that's what's so great about you mentioning, or both of us mentioning these terrible moments in draft history is, unbeknownst to them, a bunch of GMs are about to do that very thing. There are GMs that don't know they are about to cost themselves their job. That they're like, and we don't know either, by the way. That's what's so fun about it is, it's somebody is going to flip the Jaden Daniels, Drake May coin, and that's going to be it for them.
Well, I want to ask you that question. I think it is remarkable that 50 years later, there's some major differences between the operations of the 26 teams drafting then versus the 32 drafting now. And our obsession with it is exponentially greater than it was in the 70s and all of that. And we'll point out some of those funny little differences. in this upcoming podcast. Point is, make sure you're subscribed to Minus Three. We'll come out with that either Tuesday night or early Wednesday morning. And it's fun. It's not just all Steelers genuflection. There is another team that looms large in the 70s. We get into them, the other great drafts in NFL history. So make sure you check that one out. It's good infotainment, I think we can call it. The draft process that we don't now, with all the advanced analytics and our just general obsession with it and our focus on, and, you know, back in the 70s, you had to get big reels to even, if you were an NFL scout, if you weren't watching them with your own two eyes in person, you were watching them on those big reels and all that. Now we all have access with the internet to watching obscure players from D2 schools and otherwise. And yet, we can't divine whether or not one of the top five picks is definitely going to make it. One of the most valuable picks, let's say the top 10 are like, should be can't miss home run picks. And yet, you know, that 3 to 6 of them will bust out. I think that is one of the most amazing things. And what holds our attention in a world that has ever more streaming options available for us and all the YouTube programming and everything else, the thing that makes sports so compelling is we still don't know the answer to the end of the book. We only think we do.
It's such an inexact science, and obviously it's nowhere as inexact as it is with the most important position, right? So it's like quarterback, you can't win without a QB, and one of these guys is going to be a complete bust. By the way, as a Patriot fan with the third pick, I've just decided to ignore all the warning signs on Drake May, and I'm all in. I just want Drake May. By the way, I was delighted when Mac Jones fell to 15, and I was also on the record as saying you'd be crazy to take Durant over Greg Oden. So I'm sure I'm wrong about this, but I love that Drake May stayed at Carolina. All those intangibles, like, you know, he seems like a leader. He seems like guys want to follow him in a battle. And so hopefully now if they get a huge package in return for that pick, I guess I could reconcile myself to it, but I would be perfectly happy with coming away with Drake May the first round.
I think it's the right thing. And it does. I mean, it sounds like Jaden Daniels is a goner. He's going to be in our nation's capital. Some smoke screens out there. More and more, though, I find that there are, I wouldn't say 32 teams over doing this. A lot of teams, if you pay attention, are telling you what their intentions are. There's really not a reason necessarily. If you're trying to draw teams underneath you to make offers to move up, those teams are the ones smoke screening. If you're in the bottom half of the first round, there's no reason to betray your intentions there. And I think you start to see that. I think everybody loves to buy that, like, these teams are all lying. And I perpetuate a lot of that too, that players, agents are telling lies. We've reached the point though now where teams are telling you what they're going to do, and they're probably going to act it out, and who they're meeting with is a primary indicator of where they're going to go. Okay, Hench, Drake May is who you want. You sit there at number 3, New England Patriots lover, Drake May, the official pick for you.
Yeah, and what we're hoping, right? So, you know, when Jason Tatum was drafted, the Celtics figured out, we want Jason Tatum. We can trade out. We can get Tatum at 3, get some more value, trade out of that pick, let Markelle Fultz and Lonzo Ball go before Jason Tatum. Now, in retrospect, you're like, oh my God, how did Jason Tatum fall to 3 when Markelle Fultz and Lonzo Ball were the two guys ahead of him? Now, of course, Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels could be Markelle Fultz and Lonzo Ball. Nobody knows. So
that's right.
What we're trying to manifest is that we're going to get the best quarterback of the 3 at 3. And maybe also, like, there's a new thing. Maybe it's generational, but like a lot more weirdos getting drafted in this generation. Like, I don't know if we should take Mike Webster in the 5th round in 1974. He's a weirdo. Like, like these kids, like it, and maybe it's the NIL. I don't know what it is, but like, you know, there are flags that, you know, Jeff George was a prima donna, but like, I don't know, you know, right when Jaden Daniels left Arizona State, his teammates were like, good riddance, right? And so Caleb Williams, I don't care about the finger paint necessarily. I don't know, the sobbing. I mean, I guess men should be in touch with their feelings, but I don't know. Drake May, when I see him, you know, sharing his dough with the linemen, I'm like, yeah, that's all a good sign.
I agree, but then I'm conflicted because old man Brady, I don't know if you hear his latest remarks, which, by the way, very often play as him being a hypocrite. He doesn't like the rules that favor the offense, and obviously the Tom Brady rule exists because he got hit in the knee in the first game of the season by Bernard Pollard the year after they almost went undefeated. That doesn't make him a hypocrite, but I think
the Kimo von Ohlhofen rule? Which rule?
Not that rule. The one, the Tom Brady rule. Like, don't touch him. Always so offended by anyone touching him. How dare anyone?
Blows up Carson Palmer's knee in the first possession.
That's right. You know what? I'm far enough past that one that's fine. If Bungles fans want to cry that Kimo did that one on purpose, then good. You know what? That's right. The Steelers did that to once again dominate you in a big spot, and so they did. Deal with it, Bungles. You live in Ohio. Yeah, listen, Brady, all that. But now Brady's thing is that these guys are me guys. They celebrate themselves too much. They're not about the team. And maybe there's something to that. But I don't know. Broadway Joe, is that he is a team guy, but obviously outwardly, he certainly seemed like a me guy. I don't know. Is it the end of the world if the people who are reacting to the fingernail painting and all that kind of stuff they're getting worked up about.
Here's where it matters. And I think it's kind of important. And I think Broadway Joe's a very good example. I mean, obviously, we all know that Broadway Joe threw more interceptions than touchdowns in his career. And like Broadway Joe didn't have as great a career, I think, as people think he had based on the Super Bowl and the guarantee, the Super Bowl in which he threw exactly zero touchdowns. Broadway Joe, I don't think would work today because of the amount of work you have to put in to be an excellent quarterback in the NFL now. Like, you can't just sling it. You can't sling it. If you're not recognizing defenses, if you're not making those line of scrimmage calculations, you can't overcome that with just with physical excellence. You have to be in the room. You have to be watching film. You can't be at Broadway Joe's. You know, you can't be at your nightclub. And so I do think me first guys who are very like, you know, rah-rah, who've been doing it with their physical ability, they're going to get to a league where everyone's fast, everyone can hit, everyone can cover. And if you're not putting in the extra work to understand what you're seeing when you get to the line of scrimmage. And so, I mean, this is the real question. Like, Brady just wanted to watch game film. He's the most boring human being of all time. Like, he loved preparing for football games. I don't know. Are these guys, you know, of the guys in this draft, who seems the most likely to enjoy game film? JJ McCarthy? I don't know. You know, it's like, but
it is the specific thing that I maybe rises above every other virtue that you would look at for a pro football quarterback, assuming the minimum standard is met. Like, Case Keenum can't be the franchise quarterback because he just doesn't have the arm. But okay, so if you establish a minimum standard for your franchise QBs, and they're at least going to rise to a certain level above Case Keenum in terms of arm strength and go from there, it does feel to me like the most important thing you can have above everything else is being able to step to the line of scrimmage and say, like, I'm going here with the ball, right? I mean, isn't that like, that's the Breeze, Peyton, Brady method of success?
For sure. You know, in that crazy Patriots victory in the AFC Championship game and the Dee Ford game, you know, the Patriots would basically, they'd flip-flop Edelman from one slot to the other slot, and Brady would get to the line of scrimmage and go like, oh, he's going to run the same pattern, but it's a mirror pattern of the pattern he ran with the other side. he would be open 100 times out of 100 times, you know? So it's like, I'm not going to try and force the ball into one of these guys. I know where I'm going. And, you know, and obviously super relaxed, you know, Brady and Montana, those guys are like freaks who are like, are you more comfortable now than when, than in the second quarter? I don't, you know, like, so that these immeasurables, like they're going to be, well, a couple of these guys are going to try to force the ball in. And it's funny because Drake May, they're, it's a weird, like they're using the Josh Allen comparison as a knock on Drake May. They're like saying, like, much like Josh Allen coming out of Wyoming, there are real question marks about Drake May's dot, 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 dot. And I'm like, yeah, I'd be fine with that. That sounds great. Josh Allen, no problem.
Ain't that right? That once you give, it's almost a shame that that Josh Allen has worked out, because it's created an excuse for the next generation's worth of offensive coordinators and head coaches and GMs doing that. Like, well, it worked for the Bills taking Josh Allen. They were able to fix him. Maybe we can fix this guy too. Almost always, you cannot change a guy inherently by bringing him in to your program.
But I think a lot of it, and this is definitely was true for Mac Jones, you know, it's like, what windows was Josh Allen throwing into at Wyoming? How much separation were Drake May's guys getting, as opposed to Jaden Daniels throwing to two of the top 20 picks in the NFL draft? Like, it's like, it's a little easier. And I think what Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle taught us about Mac Jones is like, yeah, it can be really deceiving when you know which guy's going to get open, or all the guys are going to get open, and by how much and where to put the ball. It's like, you want guys who can throw guys open, and you know, that's, and you don't necessarily see that on tape if you're surrounded by stiffs. So, I mean, I like the fact that Drake May was not surrounded by a ton of talent at North Carolina.
And right. And you have to every year, even if you are obsessed by college football, which I am, watching high end Power Five teams and the best players and all of that, you still are left trying to play sleuth about, like, the I am plagued by the Matt Leinart syndrome. I thought Matt Leinart was going to work in pro football because he was a leader of that great team. And even if he wasn't as skilled as some of his peers were, I thought that clearly he knows how to manage that huddle and all that sort of crap. And it just proved to be complete nonsense. And then there's Joe Burrow a few years ago in the same program, surrounded by high-end talent, great pass catchers. Well, as Joe Burrow, who has a good arm, but not a great arm, is he just the beneficiary of Chase and company? No, it turns out they benefited each other. So how you figure out Jaden Daniels, who, by the way, has two high-end wideouts who are projected to go in the first round too, how do you make sense of that? And then you talk about Drake May, who was alone on an island, relatively speaking, at UNC, not surrounded by that level of talent.
This is a good, like, this is like post Wonderlic. Like, it's a little spy versus spy, but like, you hire somebody, you know, to like, you know, go to the draft, and then you go like, hey, Leinart, we're going to have some ladies up to the hotel, up to the suite. You know, we're going to have, you know, and then he's like, hey, man, what time's that kicking off? And then Joe Burrow's like, yeah, man, I'm in town for business. Thanks anyway, weirdo.
That's right.
TV weirdo. Like, you really need to find super boring guys. Like, you know, like, hey, Tom, we're just, you know, the midnight shift at Scores is ending. We're going to have some ladies up to the suite. And they're like, yeah, not interested. You're like, you report back to your GM, like, yeah, this guy's super boring, man. This guy does not enjoy a good time at all. He doesn't want a cocktail and a lap dance. And like, I definitely.
Ooh, better yet, the players should show up with stuff embedded in their brain that isn't true, but they could just be like, hey, coaches, I really am excited about this meeting, but I also have a tutorial on my coding for my new offensive analysis program that I'm developing for the world. Like, people, this is an interesting guy. Just make up crap about yourself.
You want a robot. That's the thing.
So anyway, we're getting excited for the draft. We have that steel curtain, or I should say the 1974 Steelers draft, Bill Nunn, Dan Rooney, Chaz Nolan, all the rest of it ready to roll for you coming up in the later in the week. And we'll dig in further on the draft as it gets closer and closer. In the meantime, Hench, let's talk about Matt Ryan here quickly, and then we can get to our goat and goat segment of the week. But Matt Ryan officially retired. We've had this conversation before, but quickly, all or nothing. Number two. Interesting case. Seventh all-time in passing yards, ninth all-time in touchdown passes. He is that figure who we've been looking for about 20 years, where you saw it coming, like the numbers are going to be gangbusters, but all these guys can't get into the Hall of Fame. Is Matt Ryan now the cut line for it?
Well, I mean, it's funny because my reflex was like, of course he's a Hall of Famer. But then I realized, you know, as we just got done talking about Lynn Swann and his 336 career catches being in the Hall of Fame, we guys our age have to start adjusting, because everyone's numbers are going to go in Matt Ryan's direction, right? The numbers are never going to come back to earth as the competition committee figures out new ways to punish the defense for tackling. So Matt Ryan is the perfect test case, because you're like, obviously on the numbers, he belongs in the Hall. But as I've said many, many times, why Julian Edelman's a Hall of Famer, it's like numbers only matter if they lead to the thing we are all pursuing, which is championships. And so, you know, somebody has to be the most deserving guy to not be in the Hall, right? The cut line, as you say, right? And it's like, I think given where numbers are going and given how many guys are going to blow by Matt Ryan.
Well, Matthew Stafford will in the short term. Russell Wilson has an outside shot. I don't think he'll get there, but so that'll knock him down a little bit when Stafford, you know,
so
in the
just
next year.
Those two guys, you're like, all right, you put up the same, basically the same raw numbers, and you two guys won titles, and you never won a title. Sorry, we only have two slots. They have to go to Stafford and Russell Hustle Bustle, because they won the Super Bowl. And I don't know if you remember, but Matt Ryan didn't win the Super Bowl. Led 28-3, made a great throw to Julio Jones down the sideline, but then took a bad sack.
I mean, listen, the numbers are close enough at this point, and I know the cools don't like it, the analytics cools. Won't embrace this, but to me, that's what it comes down to, is you can't put half of the quarterbacks of the generation into the Hall of Fame, because it diminishes the Hall of Fame and the achievement of getting in there. If half your peer group is in there alongside of you, I think the Stafford-Ryan line is where that cut will be made. And I think you got to give it to Stafford over Ryan, because he got a Lombardi and Ryan didn't. Period. The end, right?
Agreed. Same garage.
Hey, by the way, very quickly, because you brought it up and I was interested in this. What if you did a generational trade? Joe Namath for Lamar Jackson. So Joe Namath, 69, probably better. So 68, his knees are ruined even before, you know, before he really makes the big time. But okay, let's say 1968 Joe Namath gets traded for 2023 Lamar Jackson. Who wins that trade?
This is it. Like, obviously Lamar Jackson. Are we talking about Lamar Jackson running around against guys in the late 60s?
Yes.
Yeah. Lamar Jackson would score on every possession.
Okay. You can laugh that one off, but then why didn't anybody do that?
Well, first of all, there weren't any Lamar Jacksons.
You could say racism. The answer may well be racism.
Well, right? I don't remember.
That guy, he could do that in college, but he's not going to do it at the highest level, turn him into a receiver, right? That's probably what would happen.
I mean, look, I don't remember what Joe Gilliam's skill set was, but like, you know, the Turner Gills, the Tommy Frazier's, like, yeah, Lamar Jackson is Lamar Jackson because he can also sling it. So it's like you have to have a minute, like the RPO doesn't work if the P is not a real threat, but Lamar Jackson... taking off against you know, the Art Donovan. I don't know if he was still on the Colts, but, you know, it's like, yeah, that would. And then the flip side is like Namath threw a ton of interceptions before defenses got exotic.
Oh, that's the part that's no good. That makes that may as well ask Eddie Spaghetti this question. I bet Spaghetti has a better answer for you because he loves Namath, or at least his old man does. Namath would be relevant and a high-end quarterback in the 21st century. How say you, Spaghetti?
I guess I'm just biased due to age. I mean, I don't really care enough about Joe Namath. I mean, yeah, a lot of New Yorkers like him, whether you're a Jets fan or not. But I still feel like the athletes are not up to the skill level the athletes were today. Everyone today is, like we talk about on the show, everyone's a brand. Everyone is caring about nutrition and training for 12 months a year.
All right, well, assume that. I mean, you got to make that assumption or else you can't play this dumb game I'm trying to play. You have to assume that the players of yesteryear benefit from the same advancements in training and all that sort of crap that these guys do. They're not like we're not better human beings than our forefathers of 30 years ago.
But why would Namath, like Hench was saying before, like Namath was a me guy, and now with the everyone becoming a brand in social media, like how do we know he wouldn't become like Johnny Manziel 2.0, like really get to his head? I think Lamar Jackson would absolutely dominate. They never saw a 6'3" quarterback that could still sling it and just dance around defenses. They'd be
shocked. That's the fun question then. Who, if you could send back any player to, you know, 1970, who would dominate that league the most?
It's important that everybody listening understand that Joe Namath threw 173 touchdown passes and 220 interceptions.
Everybody threw more interceptions back then. That's not that's an out of context number.
Other than George Blanda, find a well-known quarterback who had such a terrible touchdown to interception ratio. So
Bradshaw wasn't great in some seasons. I mean, there are a lot of guys who threw a ton of picks. They all did.
I guarantee you, as poorly as he started, by the time Bradshaw finished, he was above 1-1. Right? No,
Yes,
212 touchdowns, 210 interceptions. I was right.
Okay, but he gets to the league a little bit after Namath did, but okay.
He threw 47 more interceptions than touchdowns, and he would finish third in a race with Lamar Jackson and Susie Culber.
Okay, so who would be good? What quarterback of yesteryear would be good now? Roger Staubach?
Roger the Dodger had that athleticism. Pretty short window of excellence. Always surprised by his raw numbers.
He doesn't remember. He takes the years off because he's in the Navy.
I mean, you know, I don't know if we can count Montana as yesteryear, but I definitely think that guy's game translates.
Do you really?
Yeah, for sure. Like, take care of the ball, you know, put guys in position, you know, yards after catch.
It feels to me like not 5 minutes ago, but it feels like, you know, maybe a couple hours ago that Steve Young was in the NFL, but it really was more like 25 years ago. Steve Young would be the better pro in 2024 than Joe Montana.
What if I just said like Bob Waterfield? Oh my God, would Bob Waterfield's game translate? He played in the wrong era. He was a visionary. Recently,
well, the guy who would be Deacon Jones. Deacon Jones would be a relevant pass rusher in the 21st century.
Although every snap would be a 15-yard penalty, obviously, because signature.
Yeah, offensive linemen. I mean, if they were built like they were built then,
I'm just gonna start Otto Graham.
I'm just thinking about the QBs. I'm talking about the QBs. What QB could you send back in time?
Jimmy Baugh would dominate today. Like, what kind of question is this? Like, Norm,
a fun one. That's what kind of question it is.
Charlie Connerly, Eddie LeBaron.
Okay, how about this? Can't have played in the last, when did Marino retire? Would he be the best? I was going to say the last 25 years. If you played in the last 25 years, you're ineligible for this.
98?
Right around there, 98, 99. So I guess he would make it. Marino would be the greatest of all time, right?
Marino, yeah. Marino's just got the cannon, you know. It's like, you know,
it's not that different. I gotta tell you, man, as far as my eyes can tell, and you know, I'm steeped in it like you are, I think Marino and Namath are not very different. I think they're kind of the same QB. Both could run, both had terrible knees, and so they didn't have that at their disposal as they got into their
if you think about it, the only difference is which team they were throwing the ball to. It's a small distinction.
Okay, I got sidetracked. I'm sorry. I got sidetracked. We're trying to delay the inevitable. I know you are. Let's get to the okay, GOAT.
Donnie Jurgensen.
He had a whip. He had a whip and a pot belly.
Let me squeeze in a quick break here.
You know, when the conversation turns tampers, I always go with my number one as Caesars. Let's talk about them a little bit, shall we? Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesars Palace. All this can be yours when you bet with Caesars Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns rewards credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using this code. Listen up. OmahaFull. The word Omaha and the word full. And then you place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great. If you keep those winnings, but if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and over only. Offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager. Returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harrah's, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER or West Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, take it away, Hench. Goat and goat, start us off. Mine are easy. My bad goat is my teams for not giving me something to watch here in springtime.
Listen, I mean, we're all angry at your Penguins because for having to watch these Capitals.
Do you see now? I know Eddie Spaghetti's happy about it because he knows deep down he don't want to admit it. He don't want to admit he can't because that would be ugly for him. He sees the Capitals
the
are a
series would have been over. The series versus the Pens would be over.
He
in five
knows he would have been a little bit scared about what might have happened. He knows what could.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. Sid the Kid would have had a shot on goal.
That's definitely true.
He would have had one shot on goal.
GD right.
For Rempe to score more goals than Ovechkin had shots on goal, it just tells you how decrepit that Capitals team is. Like, it's so sad for all of us. But you know what? Maybe the President's Trophy deserves a bye, and obviously the Rangers come as close as possible to getting a bye. although always scary with Tom Wilson out there. Okay.
You also got a crappy matchup too. Congratulations to the both of you.
Well, good goat. I got to say, it in a world where if a guy's nose gets grazed by a ring finger, he throws his head back, hits the court, rolls around to try to get the flagrant two. It's so embarrassing. Like, dude, you know you didn't get hit. You know everything's on high def camera. What are you doing? It's embarrassing. The flip side of that, Jason Tatum legitimately low bridged while he's in the air with the game not in the balance by Caleb Martin. Like, he goes into him low and hard while he's in the air. Tatum lands on his back. It's terrifying. Tatum does not go like, how do I get this guy suspended? He just pops up and runs to the foul line. Like, it was like, I mean, obviously it was good for me and my palpitations that he hopped up, but it was also like, hey guys, I'm not hurt. So I'm not going to roll around and pretend to be hurt like a South American soccer player, which all NBA guys do now. They hold their face. It's like Diego Maradona. It's so embarrassing. It's like, yes, if you're not hurt, feel free to get up and move on with the game. You know, so good goat, Jason Tatum, good example for his son, Deuce, for all of us. Yeah, if you're not hurt, don't pretend to be hurt. No, like, it's like, just get up and play the game. Well done. Triple-double, didn't shoot well. Hopefully shoots better in game two. Bad goat, couple of nominees. These Indiana Pacers, or should I say Indiana Disgracers. Like, it's rare. No, it is rare. I mean, it happens. We've all seen it, right? Where, you know, like when Sam Darnold saw ghosts against the Patriots, it's rare when you see professional athletes, you're like, whoa, they're not up to it. They're not mentally up to the stakes have been raised. The Pacers come out. Now, Siakam, who's had a nice long championship playoff run, has a lot of playoff games under his belt. He plays fine. All the other Pacers are visibly terrified by being in the playoffs. I mean, Aaron Nesmith, on the first possession of the game, Aaron Nesmith gets the ball on the wing, rises up to shoot a three, changes his mind, and lands. He just jumps in the air with the ball, panics, and lands. And the referee's like, I'm sorry. I don't know. In the playoffs, that's a violation. I don't know if you've been in the playoffs before, but that's a violation. I'm going to need to take that ball from you. Later, Nesmith does that thing where it's like he's dribbling with the shot clock winding down. And it's like, obviously, we can see it at home, but you're like, do you feel it? Do you sense it? Do you know how long you've been doing this? The ball. And he just dribbles out the clock because they're so paralyzed. And then Nembhard and Halliburton, like, totally overwhelmed by the playoffs, you know, while Dame Lillard is scoring 35 in the first half and basically not, you know, ending game one. So we'll see if they can bounce back. But my bad goat.
Let me just say this. That was the thing that occurred to me was when Dame was lighting it up and, oh, the Bucks are going to move on. I thought the Pacers might pose an actual threat here. Maybe they still will. But if the Bucks get through this one easy, I don't know. I don't know what Giannis's shortish term prognosis is. That's got to spook you a little bit, right, Hench, as a Celtics guy? Because we have announced that the red carpet has been rolled out to the finals for the Celtics, but that could pose a legitimate barrier.
The Bucks aren't getting by the Knicks, so I'm not too worried about it.
But with Giannis, they would, right?
I'm not worried about the Bucks. But okay. All right. Now, my bad goat is, and I think I'm pronouncing this right. Forgive me if I'm not, although he doesn't deserve to have his name pronounced right. The Avalanche goalie, Alexander Georgiev.
Georgiev, correct. Georgiev. Former Rangers backup. Yep.
Thank you. Okay. He played goalie like dodgeball. Like, he played it like the idea is not to get hit by the puck. Like, hey man, if you get hit by this puck, you're eliminated. You got 2 minutes in the box if this puck hits you. Like, and the Avalanche had a bunch of terrible turnovers, odd man rushes, really, really poor blue line play. But your goalie has to hook you up once. Like, it's like, it was so crazy that, you know, he gave up. He had a 69.6 save percentage, which is a decent save percentage in lacrosse. That, but it's like, it's not. In fact, there was a point he allowed 4 goals on the first 10 shots. So the Pacers shot 35.6%. The Winnipeg Jets were shooting 40%. Like, wow, is this terrible? And then so he ends up giving up 7 goals on like 23 shots. Then, because they're chasing it and the Avalanche are, you know, playing out of their minds going forward, they pull the goalie. And at a certain point, Cole Makar is skating backwards, like against a 2-on-1 with an empty net. And he manages to keep the puck out of the net. And I'm like, wow, they're literally better with an empty net than they were with this sieve in there. Giving, I mean, I think you can tell who I bet on. Anyway, so Georgiev and the Pacers, both of whom I bet on,
bet the over next time. That's all.
Bet the over. Well, it was so. And the crazy thing is, like, my Bruins, who played a flawless game, like, you're like, you want a stress-free hockey, playoff hockey game? And playoff hockey is almost never stress-free, although Spaghetti and I can both attest to having pretty easy rides in game one. Score on your first shot, other team never ties it. Okay, I can live with that.
I've never watched a hockey game involving my team that flows that way. My team always could be up 3 goals with 10 minutes to go. It definitely is going to be tied. It's just a question of whether or not my team is going to score again to win the game.
So it was as relaxing as playoff hockey can be. But to that point, so part of why it was so relaxing is because, like, Swayman is just like a puck magnet. Like, the puck finds him. He's like, that's the idea. So the Bruins have 2 goalies, and the big issue in Boston is, like, are they going to stick with their rotation? Are they going to ride the hot hand? Then it's like, why do we have these 2 great goalies? Why didn't we trade one of them to the Avalanche for one of their 47 unbelievable skaters who can fly? You know, the Bruins have, you know, 2.5 lines of grinders. I mean, I love the work ethic, but, like, man, you know, not a ton of snipers on the roster, but we have 2 goalies, which you're not allowed to play simultaneously. So one of our best players is on the bench at all times. But man, you know, the Avalanche are loaded, and that is not a position you can be weak at if you want to make a deep cup run. It just doesn't happen.
It really is interesting what the Bruins are trying to do, which is to go tandem in goal. You never see that by choice, at least. Sometimes teams get an injured goalie in the 16 game or in the 4 rounds, 2 months of the
Mike Keenan would go, okay, you got the first period, you got the second period, and you got the third period. But it was
right. But he would act like that was happening to him. He had no choice but to take Eddie the Eagle out for some, you know, that it wasn't like he went into it like, I'm just going to go back and forth game after game. It was out of spite that he would yank the goaltender for not stopping a puck that he felt needed to be stopped. Listen, good for you. Enjoy your hockey. It's great stuff. And I will say, I like Jack Edwards. I didn't like him because I would catch him. And I think that's part of the out-of-town sports fan experience in the 21st century, because you watch, you get the different league passes in the NHL, MLB, and beyond. And so you catch some Jack Edwards calling the game. And when people get into him, like, he's such a homer, and they mean that as a negative, I don't know what they're talking about. He's the Bruins play-by-play announcer. What else should he be? Even-handed? Of course not. Leave that for the national voice. We want a homer calling our games, right?
I think I know how you feel about this with Myron Cope, but it's like,
yes, of course.
The Celtics, an honorable mention, great, you know, good goat, Mike Gorman. Celtics long time play. Yeah. I'm on the Boston sports thread, and it's like, you know, obvious homer, but also a very
prevent- who else is on it? Let me guess. I don't know who else might be on your text chain talking about all things Boston, but I love it.
Very provincial voice. And I said, my response was like, I like having local guys who can't go national. I like that.
Yeah,
like,
it's like
it makes it feel more intimate, you know. And then when when your local guy goes national and they take him away from you, you're like, yeah, you know, he was always looking at the big prize. He was never one of us. You know, it's like, you know, Gorman wants to do decades of the same job and Edwards is the same way. Of course you love it because you, you want them, you're living and dying. And then when it sounds like they are too, you're like, okay, we're all watching the same game here.
Yep. Shout out to Josh Getzoff, the TV voice of the Penguins, and all the analysts who worked along with him, Mike Rupp, Colby Armstrong specifically. We got to get Rupper on this show. I know he's listened to it on more than one occasion, but we got to get some puck talk going there. But yes, they were a great group to hang with if you were siding with the Penguins all season long, because you could feel their angst when things weren't going well, and you could feel their enthusiasm when it was going well.
We got to wrap soon. I know we got goats to get to, but just real quick, because it was one of the great moments. Welcome to showbiz. So, Sheck and I worked on a sports trivia show. It's where we met. And the answer must have been Pittsburgh Penguins, right? But it's like, you know, what team does Mike Lang, his catchphrase is, he beat him like a rented mule. And do you remember it went all the way up? Like, there were 55 people on this email asking if a mule was going to be harmed in the video. Like, it was so insane. It's everything you have to know about standards and practices, except at Nickelodeon, where obviously they can do whatever they want to kids on screen. But in the sports trivia world, we had to document that no mules would be harmed in this asking of a sports trivia question. And then I made the mistake of just doing a reply all of like, you morons have got to be kidding me. Like, I was like, I was the head writer and I didn't know, like, the president of the net. Like, it was like everyone was on this email about this poor rented mule being beaten on our sports trivia show. And I just, there were so many emails. I just snapped and basically called everyone on the thread a moron. And then it was like, hey man, you got a big apology. And I'm like, who was on the chain? Rupert Murdoch? Like, I don't know. Anyone who participated in it is a moron. What do you think? You think that the Penguins, that they show a mule being beaten, that we're going to show a mule? It was so insane. Oh,
well, and the funny button on that is we got the last laugh at the rap party. I wouldn't say that mule was abused. I think the mule even kind of enjoyed it. But enough said on that. This isn't about mules. This is about goat and goat. So back to mine. My good goat is the electricity in the building in the 10 to 20 minutes before the drop of the puck in game one of the playoffs, especially if your team hasn't been there in a minute. And or I get the sense Pittsburgh, a provincial town, Winnipeg, Manitoba, that's what they have. They have the Blue Bombers and they have the Jets. And the fact that their team has a shot at making a real shot this year, it feels, and making a cup run, you can feel that electricity through your TV, across the national border even, and there's nothing like it. And it makes me feel sad that the Penguins aren't in it this year. And then I try to remind myself, hey, I've watched them win it 5 times in 33 years, so I can't complain too much about that. Here's what I will
using. Do you think they were using a white puck, and that's why Georgiev, against the whiteout, like, maybe he couldn't see. It's like, can you see the puck? Feel free. No,
it was some of that residual Rangers energy on him. Like, oh, it's springtime, time for me to fail. Oh, no, I didn't mean that, Spaghetti. I already told Spaghetti I think his rags are going to the final.
Georgiev was a lot better, too, on the Rangers, being coached up by the greatest goaltending coach in the history of the NHL, Benoit Allaire. But now he wishes he had that tutelage.
Well, listen, I told you already, the rags, I think, are going to the final, and Spaghetti guaranteed it. So
if I remember correctly,
I think he did, but I don't remember exactly. Quickly, the Denver Broncos, it's new uniform season. It happens every year. One to three or four teams offer up new uniforms, and almost always they suck. And these ones really suck. The Denver Broncos are not the Jaguars or Texans and have been in the league for 6 minutes. The Denver Broncos are a tentpole franchise in pro football history, and yet They show no regard for their rich history with these new getups that look like they're designed for a team that's going to be playing on a space station, not this year, but sometime in the next 25 years or so. Futuristic, but not exactly futuristic in the here and now, or they're futuristic in the here and now, with no application of a regard or respect for their past deeds, with that cool D on the helmet and the horse who's angry and is blowing snot and smoke out of his nose and all that. No, they kept the ugly logo from the 90s that Elway at the end of his career wore for when he won those couple of Super Bowls. The whole thing sucks. And then they do that weird thing. I don't even know what the number is, like 5210 or something like that. How high up the tallest mountain is, or above sea level, the city of that. No one gives a crap is the spoiler alert. That
What they care about is a cool uniform, and you gave them nothing. World's biggest sports fan. Do you not know what 5,280 represents?
No, what does it?
That's how many feet there are in a mile.
A mile.
It's mile high city.
What does that have to do? What does that have to do with the biggest sports fan?
You've never looked at the Nuggets court and thought, gee, I wonder what that means.
I thought you were doing a bit.
Wow, are you not curious?
Weird. No, you're right. I'm not. No,
I'm
not.
They have a four-digit number on their court.
52, Mike Webster. 80, I mean, Darnell Washington, or if we went Jim Smith, maybe we could get back there.
How many rivers are outside Pittsburgh Stadium? I don't know. What does this word mean? Why is this number? Why do they say three? Maybe because
that was 5280. That is the first time I've ever heard that number. Had no idea. Or I've heard
you
it.
And many other useless facts that
the man tried to put into my brain. I said, I have no room for that.
You are living proof of the truth of the Nate Bargatze sketch on Saturday Night Live that nobody will know how many feet there are in a mile.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Those are my goat and goats. And now a quick break.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
So mine are all, there's like a string that follows all of them. Last week, everything does happen for a reason. I wanted to do John Sterling as my good go, but I'm going to do it again now for this show because
talking about homers. Good.
We had his celebration. So John Sterling obviously got the job, started broadcasting in 1960, got the job with the Yankees in 1989. He had 5,631 games called for the Yankees, which is more than the feat in a mile. And New York State Broadcaster Hall of Fame, 12-time Emmy Award winner. And he just basically said his body was just breaking down, could not do the traveling, but he obviously misses doing the games. And him and Susan together, it was like your grandparents like doing a game, and obviously they loved the Yankees, but they loved baseball more. And just like hearing his calls like burn, maybe burn, and they bomb from A-Rod, and like the Yankees win, and it is high, it is far, it is gone, and just all those like kind of calls. Like he was obviously a large part of the Yankees, like the dynasty team, so you just associate those teams with him. And having Bob Shepard in the stadium, having John Sterling on the radio, it's just fantastic. So I was spoiled as a kid and as an adult listening to John. So it's sad to see him go, and obviously the Yankees wanted to celebrate him, and this is kind of where I was going to do my bad goat, what the Yankees did, but something else happened, which we'll get to. And it's like George Costanza was working for the Yankees, that they're like, what should we give John Sterling as a goodbye present? Like Derek Jeter got better gifts when he was doing his goodbye tour throughout every MLB stadium. They gave John Sterling, a radio broadcaster, an 83-inch LG flat-screen television. Like, the man doesn't own a television in his house. And it does really seem like it's like a Costanza. Like, what do we get him? I don't know. He's in media. Like, go to the store. Go to the Best Buy. Pick up a TV and carry it here and give it to him. I don't know who thought of this.
You get that at the church raffle. My goodness. I know, that's I know. What they gave him?
This is how cheap the Yankees are getting. They don't want to pay Snell. They don't want to pay for Monty. And they don't want to give John Sterling, who's been a part of the organization for years and years and years, a better gift. So that was
even worse. They had Giancarlo Stanton deliver that television and he got hurt doing it. Now he's out for the year.
Although he's somehow hitting better than Aaron Judge. But anyway, so that was going to be my bad goat. But then today they lost to the lowly Sacramento Athletics. And they, in the beginning of the game, Carlos Rodon has thrown three pitches at this point. So top of the first, three pitches thrown. And what happens? A guy from the stands yells at the umpire, and then he goes, "Aaron Boone, you're out." Aaron Boone goes and says, "That wasn't me." And then the umpire, Hunter Wennelstad, goes back to him and says, "Oh, I don't care. You're out anyway." And he threw Aaron Boone out. The Yes cameras caught this, that Aaron Boone didn't have his mouth open once throughout the entire thing. And it's one thing, too, if Wennelstad threw him out, if it was somebody in the dugout, I kind of get that, even though he's wrong here. But it was just a fan, which, by the way, it's really funny. The fan got underneath the umpire's skin that quickly. And what makes it even worse, and we actually did talk about this on one of our anti-umpire ref videos that we posted probably during NFL season, where it's like, what kind of weirdos grow up and go, "I want to be a referee"? Hunter Wennelstad runs an umpire school where he collects money from prospective umpires. And this guy just ejected Aaron Boone for what a fan did. By the way, also, he's been in the game so long, he ejected Aaron Boone when he was a player on the Cincinnati Reds. So the bad go now goes to Hunter Wendelstad. That is like, you know, George Costanza gives the gift. That, to me, this is like a Larry David Kirby Enthusiasm bit where Larry's sitting behind home plate and gets that manager kicked out. So a lot of Seinfeld, a lot of Yankees references here. But I mean, what a weird stretch.
Did you get a load of that clip there, Hench?
I just saw it came on my phone, but I haven't clicked on it. I love the fact it's such a confession by Wendelstadt. Like, hey, do you feel personally good about your umpiring if you're tossing a guy three pitches into the game? Or are you on a knife's edge because you know you suck, right? That's the mentality. Good umpire doesn't have a hair trigger. By the
good
way,
point. And also, but also, like,
Hernandez is still umpiring. Like, Aaron Hernandez called a ball that was center cut.
Angel Hernandez,
yeah.
Aaron would be better.
Called a ball that was center
cut. You called him Aaron, didn't he? He called him Aaron, didn't he, Spaghetti?
Yeah, he did. And I said Aaron probably would have been better because Hernandez is, I mean, miserable.
Aaron Hernandez, I mean, check
being interesting, you wouldn't argue. I bet you wouldn't get many arguments from him, right? With him, I mean.
Angel Hernandez versus
Aaron Hernandez.
Aaron Hernandez, definitely a better umpire.
I mean, he's a better umpire.
I mean, well, look, obviously a ball down the middle of the plate, center cut, ball one. Like,
what the hell goes on? But for real, I know everybody likes to talk about Angel Hernandez, but for real, what is the answer to this, Hench? Is it the union? Like, why they can't? And aren't the other umpires are like, it's enough already with this guy. At some point, the weakest link is bad for all of us. You know, this is going to hurt our leverage and all that. Doesn't that have to be a consideration?
Weird. I mean, it's funny because I'm in a union and, you know, I'm like an apostate because I'm like, hey, maybe that writer sucks and doesn't deserve to have a job. And I'm always waiting for the cop to be like, hey man, stop doing that to motorists. Like, it's weird that unions protect their worst members. So like,
right,
the,
I guess.
The worst rider, I got to protect the worst rider. The ump's got to protect Angel Hernandez. Like, why? Like, that makes us all look worse at our job. Like, Angel Hernandez deserves a job. No, he doesn't.
It is,
unions. It's bad for unions.
You know, that all the hand-wringing that's going on lately, and deservedly so, about gambling ruining sports, but the credibility of sports is already ruined by these awful officials who we just have to accept. And that's, and we are constantly reminded there's nothing you can do about it. Deal with it. And the cucks that are out there, the people who suffer for, I'm watching, it was the Metropolitan's broadcaster, like, well, it was a terrible strike and they shouldn't have been called. Like, no one feels worse about that than the umpire does. Like, why are you're making excuses for the umpire? Like, the standard is not the same as the players on the field. These are supreme physical specimens trying to do the near impossible. And so they're going to fail a fair amount of the time. School marms are supposed to be right 100% of the time. All you're doing is sticking to the rules. Just know the rules. And they screw it up all the time. And yet they get a pass because they're out there on the field with athletes trying to do tough things who screw things up a lot. So it's like, they're just like all the other people out on the field. They're not going to be perfect. They have to be perfect. It makes me crazy.
So wild that obviously if we found out that Hunter Wendelstadt or Angel Hernandez or any umpire was betting large sums of money.
That's right.
There'd be an outrage, but he can ruin the game honestly by sucking and nothing can be done. Like, the outcome is the same for the team that got hosed. Like, you're not good at your job and we lost as a result, but it's fine as long as you weren't cheating.
As long as you didn't mean it. The umpire who took, what's his name? I don't remember his name anymore because he's not a name that will live for eternity, because the umpire got the call wrong at first base. Galarraga, who threw the perfect game, except that the ump got it wrong. Like, oops.
Jim Joyce. Jim Joyce. And Jim Joyce was actually a good umpire who really had a bad moment at a bad time. By the way, feel free to get that one wrong in the other direction. Feel free to ring the guy up and get, you know, if it's a 50-50 call and you're not sure, which obviously you can't be sure, and wrong. So you're kind of guessing, go ahead and give the guy the perfect game, kind of like deep cut here. But Coventry, a second division team, got so hosed in the FA Cup against Manchester United on an offsides call with the electron microscope. So the electron microscope has drawn a line. The guy is, you know, it's American striker Haji Wright is a millimeter offsides. And it's like, you're in the replay booth and you can just go, it's fine. He's on. Like, you don't have to,
That's always my point. Right.
You can go like, hey, we can have the greatest sports story of all time in Coventry, England, or we can go, I think he's a millimeter offside, you know, like, but, you know, so yes, when you still, like, it's like they can slow it down, they can watch it, and then they can still ruin the game. I beg for the robots.
It really is. That's the only answer I can see. All right, listen. Spaghetti, are you done there? Because I'm done.
And I'll just put a bow on it here. I just literally just came across that Hunter Wendelstadt had they did the pool report. They talked to them, and he basically said that because Aaron Boone's responsible for the team, that he's still deserving of being kicked out of the game. And so it's like, he's not going to get suspended, and he essentially could have cost the Yankees a game. Who knows? And they're going to continue messing the game up. Like baseball isn't, like, just keep adding to the list of the issues with baseball. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
No, it's a rite of spring where every spring, Angel Hernandez costs a team a game and every baseball fan goes, no way, that guy's still umpiring. Didn't he lose his lawsuit? Like, it's a shock. And it's like, oh yeah, that guy's never going to lose his job.
I mean, you know, I read about some girls in West Virginia in a middle school who decided not to compete with something because of a transgender issue. You know, the merit of doing that is besides the point, except to say, for real, why don't Major League Baseball teams just one day, like when Angel Hernandez is behind the dish, just like, much like Neu Heisel and Pete Carroll did on my radio show forever ago, and be like, okay, we're publicly saying here, we're both going to take 15-yard delay of game penalties because we're both going to wear our home jerseys in this game and make that agreement in advance. Why can't two Major League teams, especially late April, early May, just go like, no, we're not going to play today. We're not going to play for this crap. We work too hard. There's too much on the line professionally for all of us here to have it come down to this goon. I love it. Why wouldn't that work?
I love it. And you've done other things. You've got the overtime rule changed in the NFL. I think this can be your new crusade. But where are you going to find two teams that have both been screwed by Angel Hernandez? Oh, right. That's every
Touché.
Team.
It'll never all happen. Right. You're right. Hey, listen. All I can wish for now, since I have nothing to root for until football season, and even then I'm worried, as the Denver Broncos bring in Zach Wilson to compete with Jared Stidham and Ben DiNucci, saddled by tens of millions of dollars of dead money, because that's how bad they had to get away from Russell Wilson, a.k.a. the Pittsburgh Steelers' presumed starting quarterback in 2024. Nothing to worry about, Steelers fan. That's all. They just got it wrong. So did the Seahawks. They're all wrong. Definitely QB whisperer Mike Tomlin has it 100% right here. Anyway, all right, we got a big week coming up here, Spaghetti, so we'll cut it off here. We got that 1974 Pittsburgh Steelers draft to get into. Got some good stuff planned for you as we round out the week. Speaking of this week, you want to be tuned into the Extra Points Network. Eddie Spaghetti got together with Toby Mergler to start the week of Trendy off. Follow them there with their best bets. Lemon Pepper Parlay boys are getting it on. Me and Sarah Tiana doing so on Thursday. Extra Points. Like I say, it's all happening. The draft, the playoffs. All I can wish for now is for Hench's Celtics and Hench's Bruins to have to play Spaghetti's Rags and Spaghetti's Knickerbockers, and for them to all lose. And then that's the only way for it to feel even for me. Because outside of that, I don't really know. I guess I'm just going to live vicariously through you guys watching these games, because my teams are all irrelevant now. All right. Talk to you in a day or so. Be on the lookout for that special Old Man and Cast edition of Minus Three. And until then, thanks so much, sports fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.